This is Nachiomi, Sefer Melachim Aleph, Chapter 3. King Shlomo gets married to the daughter of the Pharaoh of Egypt, seemingly in order to establish diplomatic relations with the superpower of the region. All of our rabbis and commentators assume that the kings of Israel who married non-Jewish women were careful to convert them to Judaism first, even if these conversions were conducted under less than ideal circumstances. The text informs us that there was still no national temple constructed in the early days of Shlomo's kingdom, so various local altars continued to operate legally. It was only after the building of the temple in Jerusalem that these unauthorized places of worship became forbidden. We will see later in the book of Melachim that there is a connection between Shlomo's nuptials and the delayed establishment of the Holy Temple. This link is alluded to in our chapter, but not yet explained. Shlomo visits Giv'on to worship Hashem with 1,000 sacrifices. That night, Hashem appears to Shlomo in a dream and offers to grant him anything that he wishes for the further advancement of his regime. Shlomo responds that he is young and inexperienced and feels inadequate to the task of leading and judging the nation of Israel. He therefore asks for the wisdom necessary to guide them properly. Hashem answers that since Shlomo did not seek the material benefits of kingship, like wealth or honor, but instead desired knowledge and understanding to serve the people, he would receive both the wisdom he requested and the riches and fame that he declined to request. However, Hashem warns Shlomo, all of these promises are contingent on Shlomo's continued observance of the laws and statutes of the Torah. The next morning, Shlomo wakes up, returns to Jerusalem, and offers additional burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Ark of the Covenant, organizing a celebratory feast for all of his officers and servants. The text then describes what is probably the best-known biblical narrative about Shlomo. Two prostitutes who had lived together in the same house approached the king for judgment. Both had given birth to babies just a few days apart. One of the infants died, and the women disputed whose child it was. The mother who discovered the dead baby in her bed alleged that it was not her son. She claims that the other woman switched the children when she discovered that her own infant had passed away. The women argue their respective cases before Shlomo. Unable to resolve the dispute, Shlomo requests that a sword be brought to the court and that the living baby be sliced in half so that it can be divided between the two claimants. One of the women is satisfied with this arrangement, but the other one protests, begging the king to simply give the baby to the other woman so it will survive. The king correctly rules that she is the true mother, and her child is returned to her. At this point, the entire nation reveres King Shlomo, recognizing the divine wisdom he possesses and his extraordinary ability to judge the people. One of the fascinating questions raised about this famous case of the two harlots is what it was exactly about Shlomo's ruling that demonstrated that he was so wise. Some midrashim and commentaries interpret the judgment as being based on intricate legal principles that are not mentioned explicitly anywhere in the text, but could be inferred from a between-the-lines reading, and that this vast knowledge of Torah that Shlomo had was what impressed everybody. Other commentaries are dissatisfied with the suggestion that the story means to tell us that Shlomo was an expert in Jewish law, when none of the content of Jewish law or complex legal reasoning is actually mentioned in the narrative. My friend and colleague, Rabbi Chaim Angel, has convincingly argued that what stood out about Shlomo wasn't the content of his judgment, but the reach of his judgment. In other words, the fact that even two prostitutes who were at the bottom of the barrel of society could be given a fair hearing in the king's court was what testified to the greatness of Shlomo as a leader. According to this approach, we should not look to the details of the case itself to evaluate Shlomo's superiority as a judge, nor should we seek complex legal nuance or genius in his ruling. What was unique about Shlomo's regime was his insistence that justice be applied at all levels and to all aspects of the nation, and that fairness and equity before the law not be the special privilege of the elite or even of the middle class. To borrow a famous quote that summarizes this view, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. At one time, I was persuaded by this interpretation of the story of Shlomo. However, further study and reflection has changed my mind. From a textual standpoint, it seems to me too much of a stretch to claim that the elaborate details of the claims presented to Shlomo and the novelty of his famous and dramatic solution have nothing to do with the impact his judgment had on the perspective of the people. A simple reading of the story supports the conventional understanding that it was the actual ruling of Shlomo and not the mere fact that he was willing to hear a dispute between two harlots that impressed his subjects. Therefore, I'd like to offer an alternative interpretation that I believe fits the narrative more smoothly. faced with an insoluble he said, she said legal case, such as the one that was brought before Shlomo in our chapter, most judges would have thrown up their hands and fallen back on whatever conventional principles of jurisprudence were available to them. Perhaps they would rule that possession is 9/10 of the law, and that whichever mother currently held the baby would be able to keep him. Under normal circumstances, a judge would probably view this situation as beyond any real resolution, assuming that the facts of the case would never be ascertained, and that a legal ruling, while necessary, might not reflect the real truth of who deserved to keep the infant. Shlomo's greatness was that he was not willing to acquit himself with a pro forma legalistic response. Instead, he used his profound understanding of psychology to manipulate, so to speak, the lying mother, and thereby cause the actual facts of the case to come to light. Through his brilliant handling of the situation, he demonstrated his uncompromising commitment to the truth and his unwillingness to be satisfied with rulings that met legal standards but fell short of absolute justice. This explains why the nation feared or revered Shlomo and acknowledged his level of wisdom as divine. Like Hashem himself, Shlomo would accept no substitute for genuine, unadulterated truth when it came to implementing justice in Israel.